Happy Wednesday morning to each and every one of you out there in Radio Land. God is good. The sun is shining. Woke me up early this morning. I give him praise and glory. And my flowers were also laughing in the sunlight and dancing. So God is good and the sunlight is good. So welcome to A Voice of a People here live on WGH Talk. Today is the 26th of 2023. Time is moving fast, and we have to, gird up our loins and move along with time. Although we can't keep up with time, so don't let us try, but let us do our best to get some things accomplished today. So my name is Linda Sims once again, and I would like to share with you some things. Like, we do stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. You have an opportunity to download a free app called TuneIn on any electronic device and search WWGH. Now, once you download that app, scroll down to the place where it says search and then type in WWGH. Or you can call in during a live broadcast anytime, any day we are live in the studio. Please call 740-383-9944. If you have any questions, if you'd like to make any comments, or just contact myself or my guest of the day. Again, that number is 740-383-9944. Okay, now let me share with you those who faithfully supported Voice of a People. Starting with Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC, of 1325 North Main Street, Marion, Ohio. Phone there is 740-382-8552. We have Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson of 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. Phone there is 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. They have an ongoing announcement every third Saturday of every month. They will be having free produce. The next one starts May the 20th. It begins at 12 noon at the above-mentioned address until 2 p.m. They will also be having a Ladies' Day at all occasions in Waldo, Ohio, May the 6th. It begins at 11 a.m. So those of you ladies who are interested in that, hope to see you there. It should be a good time and a fun time. We also have Cheryl Lee. She is the coordinator of Child's Evangelism Fellowship, known as the Good News Club, faith-based program that is in our Marion City Schools, Marion County Schools, and also North Union County Schools. It is an after-school program. This is the end of their year, but if you are interested in your children and grandchildren being a part of that program, when school starts up again, please go to the office and pick up your registration forms. It starts up in October. Or contact Cheryl Lee at 740-262-0939. I also want to encourage you that this program has been in the Marion City Schools since 2009. So it's not something that just started. So if you would like to also give donations, she is also the fundraiser for the chapter here in Marion County. Again, her number is 740-262-0939. And also, faithful supporters and listeners, thank you for your time. Thank you for your support. If it's your first time, I pray it is not your last time for listening to A Voice of a People. I have a thought for you to take today, and it is entitled Generosity. Generosity can be defined in many ways, but respect, kindness, benefit, and accessibility are its key characteristics. Generosity is like a fruit tree in season. All its fruit is available to anyone for the picking. When I am full, complete, when I have conquered selfish needs, then I can be naturally generous. My being is open to others to share the best without any obligation. My being is open to others to share the best without any obligation. Hopefully that thought today can help you, or you can use that to share with someone else. Now I turn my attention to Fred Malone, who is the chairman of the Marion County Historical Society. And how are you doing today, Fred?
Wonderful. Thank you, Linda. Appreciate being here.
Yes, absolutely. It's been a minute since I saw you.
Yeah.
A month is a long time, isn't it?
It is. But, you know, the older we get, the faster they go by.
I know.
As with the years, you know, it's hard for me to believe. First of all, I want to thank you very much for coming to the Historical Society's event last month, Night at Heritage Hall. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
It was fun.
Yeah. It's meant to be fun. It's also meant to be educational.
And it was.
And we had a very good turnout that night. I think we ended up with like 157 people, which is a really good turnout for an event like that. But
great.
It's something we've done every year. I think that was our 17th year of doing that particular event, and we're going to continue it. So again, thank you, and put it on your calendar and come back again next year, because the characters always change. Yeah, they always change. A couple of things I wanted to mention. I, of course, will be back on May 24th next month.
Right.
But Mother's Day is May the 7th, I believe, if my calendar was correct. I think it's the first Sunday in May.
Okay.
So that's May 7th. And since I won't be here before Mother's Day occurs, I had a poem I wanted to read. In fact, I want to start today with a poem, and I want to end our show today with a poem. This is rather an interesting poem. It was written by a gentleman from Marion who wrote a book called Thoughts in Prose and Poetry over 100 years ago. And his name was N. Esta Arnold. You know, if there are any Arnolds out there, you could possibly be related to this gentleman. And I found this book just this past Saturday at the Marion County Library's book sale, annual book sale. And they had a real large grouping of vintage books, and being a book collector that I am, I always like to search through the older books, the books that were written 100 or more years ago. And I found this one, and I like poetry. I like prose, and I like poetry. And so I found this book, and the first thing I usually do when I find an old book is I'll open it up and see the copyright date when it was written. This particular book was written in 1924, again, by a gentleman from Marion. And as I leaf through the book, there were a number of poems in here that I really enjoyed, and I'm going to start our meeting off today with a poem called My Mother's Hands, in honor of Mother's Day and all those mothers. Now, I lost my mother 13 years ago, but there isn't a day that goes past that I don't think of her, sincerely. I can feel the touch of my mother's hands as I sit alone in her old armchair. I can hear her voice so sweet and low as she gently combed my tangled hair. I can feel that touch so mild and sweet as she soothed the pain in my aching head and gently laid me by her side and sang me to sleep in my trundle bed. But oh, for the touch of my mother's hands, and oh, for the sound of her soft, sweet voice, while memory wafts from the better land, now she's at home, she was his choice. God knoweth best, his way is right, he knoweth all and doth not err. He gaveth the hands to touch her boy, to the end he might be drawn to her. From the windows in heaven she looketh down, her hands outstretched to welcome me, her face all free from sorrow and care, as she speaks so sweetly, the Lord is here.
Amen.
Amen.
That's beautiful.
Again, that was written by a gentleman by the name of N. Esta Arnold from Marion, Ohio, and he published a book of prose and poetry. Wonderful find.
Yes.
Couple of announcements. Again, I wanted to mention the First Ladies Luncheon that this year will be held on Saturday, August the 5th at 11 o'clock. That's going to be at Tri Rivers. There are tickets available for that luncheon now. They're $25. Excuse me, it's just open seating. This year, I have four First Ladies that will be speaking. I have Nellie Taft, wife of William Howard Taft from Ohio. Harriet Lane. Now, Harriet Lane is actually the niece of James Buchanan, our only bachelor president.
Okay.
He never married, and so when he was in the White House, he had his niece serve as a White House hostess for him. Interestingly enough, she was a very young girl. I think she was only 21 when she assumed the duties of White House hostess. She was very well trained in the social graces. She was a very intelligent girl, was very popular around Washington. So I think that's going to be interesting for people, because a lot of people don't know that not all first ladies were wives of the presidents. Some of the presidents were widows and had someone else serve as them. So this is one of those cases where it was a niece. Dolly Madison, always a popular first lady, James Madison's wife, will be there. And then also, for the first time in probably 10 years, I have Mamie Eisenhower speaking at our luncheon, of course, wife of General Dwight D. Eisenhower, President Eisenhower. So I'm really excited to have all four of those ladies there. And again, that is Saturday, August the 5th at 11 o'clock. You can buy your tickets either online by going to marianhistory.com, or you can stop at the museum. Starting May the 3rd, we'll be open for the for our summer hours. May the 3rd is on a Wednesday, and we'll be open Wednesday through Sunday, 1 to 4. And you can stop anytime during those hours. Or if you want to get a ticket now, you can just go up to the State Street side door of the museum, ring the bell, and they'll be glad to come to the door and let you in and sell you a ticket. And those are $25 again for general seating, and there are still tickets left. The other thing I want to talk about, and briefly, because this isn't till November, but tickets always sell out quickly on this event. This is the Dinner with the Presidents that we do every year. I think this is our 13th or 14th year for this event. This year we will be at All Occasions Catering and Banquet Facility down in Waldo. Very nice facility. And that is Saturday, November the 4th from 4:30 to 7:30. We try to finish by 7:30. Sometimes we run a little late, so just prepare for that. There are still tickets for general seating available. All the VIP seating, I believe, is now sold out. But that general seating is available, and those tickets are $35 a person. Children age 5 to 12 are $20. And we do not really encourage you to bring a child younger than 5. It's just a little bit too young. However, we have found that kids 5 and above really do enjoy it, especially mm-hmm. meeting the presidents and being able to get their pictures taken and all that type of thing. This year, my speaking presidents are James Buchanan, Andrew Johnson, Chester Arthur, and Theodore Roosevelt. Teddy's always a favorite when he's there. Non-speaking presidents this year, George Washington, James Madison, Martin Van Buren, Ulysses Grant, Benjamin Harrison, Warren Harding, Harry Truman. And this year I have two ladies speaking, two first ladies, Helen Taft and Mamie Eisenhower. So they'll be speaking at the President's Center as well. Master of Ceremonies this year, Colonel Edmund Starling, whom I've talked about here on the air. He was a White House Secret Service agent from 1914 to 1943 for 5 U.S. presidents. And our special guest speaker is Mary Ellen Withrow, 40th Treasurer of the United States.
Amen.
One of our favorites.
Yes.
And again, that's Saturday, November the 4th, 4:30 to 7:30. Tickets are available, and you can get those at the Historical Society or by going to marianhistory.com. I did want to say thank a quick shout out to all of those people that came to the Mary Ellen Withrow Day up in Sycamore on the 15th of April. It was very well attended. Mary Ellen was there from 11 to 2. We had a steady group of people coming in all day, so she was busy.
Very busy lady.
talking at 92 years old. It's amazing.
It is amazing.
She was very busy talking and signing dollar bills and signing other things and getting pictures taken. And what was really fun about that day, and this was quite a surprise to Mary Ellen and I both, one of the first people that came in was a lady from Upper Sandusky, who was actually a trustee of the Wyandotte County Historical Society Board. Mm-hmm. And she came in and asked Mary Ellen if she was related to so-and-so. And Mary Ellen said, well, yes, that was my grandfather.
Oh, really?
And the lady said, well, just a minute. And she went outside to her car, came back in, and she had their wedding certificate.
Really?
From 1889.
Oh, my.
Yes, and gave that to Mary Ellen. They had bought a house out in the country in Wyandotte County and found this marriage certificate which was pretty good size. I mean, it was probably 18 inches long and maybe 12 inches wide. Big certificate, all fancy, you know, from the from the 1800s. Found it, did some research on it, found out that it was Mary Ellen's grandfather's farm that they bought and saved it and brought it that day and gave it to Mary Ellen. So that was absolutely fantastic.
That was priceless.
It was. It was. I mean, you know, what's the odds of something like that even surviving for a 100 and some years?
That's something.
And then for her to be able to give it to Mary Ellen while she was still living, something that she can frame and pass on to her daughters. And then the other thing that was kind of fun, there was a couple that came in also from Upper Sandusky that knew her brother Howard, who was their mail carrier for years and years and years in Upper Sandusky. So it was quite a good day for her. And then on the way home, I like to go back roads. So I took a couple of back roads and we went through Nevada, where we looked up and found Mary Ellen's aunt's house, where she used to
still
go as a child, still standing, right by the, I think it's the Broken Sword Creek, or maybe the Sycamore Creek, I'm not sure which. But the house was right there in Nevada, still standing, where she had a lot of childhood memories. And then before we got back into Marion, we came back in on State Route 231 and went past her grandfather's farm, where she had just gotten the marriage certificate, same grandfather. And she spent a lot of time there as a young girl, remembering running around in the fields and the barns and all that type of stuff as a child. So it was really a great day for her and for me as well. I so enjoy being around her and talking to her. We had great conversation going up and coming back. And again, the people from that area that came in that day were so excited to meet her and talk with her and get photographs and that type of thing. So
that's something.
It was a great day.
I bet she never dreamed that would be the ends of her
days. No.
She'd be so popular and so busy in her 90s, you
really
know?
Yeah. And to be so well thought of still, not just here, but, you know, all over the world, so to speak. And I a lot of stories I've heard her tell before, but in talking with people that day and having her relate stories to them and all the places that she'd been in her career, introducing the new money, you know, and so forth. And the quarter program. And I mean, you know, she'd been overseas to China and Taiwan and places like that. It's just absolutely unbelievable for me to think about that. So again, I thank Mary Ellen for giving up a Saturday and going up there with me. But the folks at the Mohawk Historical Society really appreciated it. The president there is Kim Moore. Kim and I have been friends for years. I am actually a board member emeritus of that organization. I served on that board for a number of years and was one of the founders of the Mohawk Historical Society about 35 years ago now. So it was a thrill for me to have her up there. And she got to see our new addition to our museum and see our museum, which she had never seen before. So it was a great day. It was a great day.
Sounds like it.
And I know she has a big honor coming up. I think it's on May the 11th down in Columbus. I just should have brought the details with me today. It's an invitation-only event, and I think my wife and I are planning to go. But she's going to be honored by by the Bliss Institute, which is it's a well-known educational type institute that does a lot of philanthropic work and that type of thing. So yeah, pretty exciting thing. She gets so many honors, you know. Even at age 92, she's gathering honors all the time. So, again, congratulations to Mary Ellen on that her latest upcoming honor. And again, I thank her for coming with me last week or a couple weeks ago up to Sycamore.
Amen. So busy.
Oh, she is. And I think that's what keeps her going. And she was there the night of the night at Heritage Hall.
Yes, she was.
It was so funny because that was the night that we had the 60-mile-an-hour winds. A lot of the town was out of power. There were places in the county were out of power, and some parts of Marion City were out of power.
Bad weather.
Oh, it was terrible. And I really didn't expect her to come. I called her about a half an hour before the event was to start, and I said, "Hey, Mary Ellen, do you need me to come after you, or are you still coming? You know, do you want to cancel out?" "Oh, no, I'll be there. And about 15 minutes before we'd open the door, here she comes walking up the sidewalk. She drove herself.
I know. I can't get over that.
Yeah.
You know, so. I can pick you up. No, I'll drive.
I know,
oh,
yeah.
My.
With 60-mile-an-hour winds.
Yes.
There was a couple of people that had evidently pulled in behind her, and they were kind of hanging on to her on each side because she's so tiny.
So thin,
you
yes.
know, with that 60-mile-an-hour wind, it's like, you know, we have a small dog warning and a small Mary Ellen warning that day. The wind was so strong. But so I really thank her again for coming tonight at Heritage Hall. She does so many things for the Marion County Historical Society.
Her room
isn't
is
it gorgeous?
Just so full
yeah,
of
it is.
Memories
and really, there's more things.
I bet.
Yeah, we didn't have enough room to put everything.
Isn't that something?
Eventually, we'd like to figure out a way to expand that collection, you know. But we're thrilled to death with what we have on display right now. And she's so gracious in coming down when we have any type of event and spending time in her room and talking about the things. I think people really get a big kick out of that.
It is.
And there's so many people that have never met her, so this gives you an opportunity to spend some time with her. I thank the Lord for giving us to her as long as she has, and I hope she's around for many years to come.
Yes, me too.
Well, today we're going to continue on with some more trivia and some more interesting facts about the presidents. There are so many things that people don't know and that we don't know about the presidents, and I'm so thankful for the people that spend a lot of time doing research and then writing books about these so that we can share them with other people. It's always been a hobby of mine to study history of all kind. I don't think I've told this story on air before, but I'll relate it. My interest in history actually began with my grandfather. My grandfather was a very prolific reader, as I am, and I learned that from him. He read 4 newspapers a day.
Wow.
Clear up until he passed away at age 88. Mm. He was still reading 4 newspapers a day. He read 2 Columbus papers, the Portsmouth Times, and the New York Times. Every day, 4 papers.
Thick papers, too.
All day.
Oh, my gosh.
Every day. And so he was very interested in current events and history. He was a great resource for the Civil War. He studied the Civil War. We had, of course, relatives that served in the Civil War. My great-great-great-grandfather was in the Revolutionary War. So history goes back a long way in the McKinley and the Malone family. This was my grandfather McKinley. But that really kind of started off because I used to play it at his feet. He sat at a desk when he read, and I would play at his feet and constantly look at what he was reading and what he was doing. But then when I got into the 8th grade, they used to teach a class called Ohio History in Ohio schools. It was a half a year class, and it was a requirement for everyone in the state of Ohio to take Ohio History. And my teacher in Ohio History was Wayne Denny. Now, I don't remember a lot of my teacher's names, but I never will forget Mr. Denny. Excuse me. He was a very good teacher, and he was a very interesting man, and he really had a great knowledge of Ohio history. And I enjoyed that class so well that at the end of the class and the end of the school year, I bought the book. I bought the textbook. I think it was the only textbook I ever bought.
Okay.
But it was, and I still have the book. So I've always been interested in Ohio history and history in general. And as I grew older, went to college, I had a minor in history, and almost became a history teacher until I found out that there was more money in business than in teaching school.
I'm sure.
But I've never lost my love for history and continued to study. I don't think you can ever... I don't think your study ever ends.
No, it doesn't.
At least not
You're
for
just
me.
Just more and more intrigued by it.
Right, absolutely.
Can I ask you a question before you get there?
Sure, yeah.
Did you have any knowledge of Rod Serling being...
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, he worked at WMRN for a couple of years. In fact, he lived here in Marion. And he wrote a lot of the scripts for the television show Twilight Zone while he was still in Marion.
Really?
And had high hopes of going on for a future career in television. And, of course, he did.
Yes, he did.
But he started his radio career. Part of his radio career was here in Marion. I think he was here for a couple of years.
Okay.
I actually found a book not long ago written by, I don't remember whether, I think it was a daughter. I can't remember if he had a daughter or a son, but it was written by one of his kids. It might have been his only child. And she talks about Marion in her book. Her father spoke of Marion. Okay. So, yes.
You do know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Scott would probably be better resource for the knowledge of Rod Serling than me, but I do know that at least that much about his time in Marion.
I'll have to ask Scott about that.
Yeah, I think Marion launched a career as a lot of famous radio people. I remember Charlie used to talk about a couple of people that were here that he worked with when he was at the station. Especially one, and I can't remember his name, but he went on to become a nationally known weatherman. Yeah, so, yeah, Marion has launched a career of quite a few people.
That's a good information.
Yeah,
it really is.
Right, absolutely.
Yes.
Well, first of all, we're going to talk about rituals and traditions. There are a lot of, I guess you might call them odd things or peculiar things or maybe interesting things that most people don't know about. So that's we're going to talk about that first. And I've got several other categories we're going to go over with as time permits. Do you happen to know who the first president was to officially name the executive mansion the White House? By any chance, do you know that?
No, I'm so sorry.
I'm not going to quiz you. I just thought maybe you might know.
Someone in the audience may know, and I want to share this with them. We are also on Facebook Live. You can go to my page, Linda Sims. If you have any comments, you can type them in there. We will be checking periodically.
And telephone calls. If
and
you want to call in with some information or a tidbit or a question, we'll be glad to try to answer them. I don't know everything, but
right.
And if I don't know it, I'll try to research it and find you the answer the next time I come.
And again, that number is 740-383-9944.
Very good. Well, that would happen to be Teddy Roosevelt.
Okay.
Teddy Roosevelt was the first person to call the White House. John Adams called the house the President's Mansion. He was the first one to give it that title. He was our second president. When he was elected president, the capital of the United States was actually still in Philadelphia. Started out in New York, then it moved to Philadelphia.
Okay.
Under Jefferson and Madison, it became the Executive Mansion, which actually would remain its official title until 1905. Now, Teddy Roosevelt, as most people know, succeeded William McKinley, who was assassinated in office in 1901. So he actually served the majority of McKinley's second term. McKinley was elected in 1900 in November and began his term in January or March, of course, of the next year. So he was only president about 6 months when he was assassinated. So Roosevelt's first term really lasted a little over 3 years, and then, of course, he was reelected for a term of his own.
Okay.
But the house was burned by the British during the War of 1812 and 1814, and Dolly Madison, who we mentioned earlier, that's going to be a speaker this year at both the luncheon and the just the luncheon, she had the house repainted and repainted it white. So when it was originally built, it was kind of an off-white color, but mm-hmm. more of a beige-type color.
Right.
Paint, of course, wasn't readily available back in those days. It wasn't like you could run down to Menards and get a gallon of whatever color
right.
you wanted. So when the British burnt it, then when it was rebuilt and refinished again in 1814, she had it painted white. So Teddy Roosevelt, when he moved in, we're going to change the name. So that's how it got the White House title. Before that, it was the Executive Mansion. Sometimes it's been called the President's House, too.
Okay.
This is kind of interesting. Which president put "In God We Trust" on a coin? Now, during his one term in Congress, Abraham Lincoln shared a boarding house with another Whig lawyer by the name of James Pollock, who was from Pennsylvania. And interestingly enough, Lincoln only served 2 years in Congress. He didn't get reelected. Both voted against the Mexican War, which quickly ended their brief congressional careers. Pollock, who was later elected governor of Pennsylvania, was also defeated for re-election. When he was president, though, Lincoln appointed Pollock to be the director of the Mint. In March of 1865, Pollock came to the White House with the idea to put the inscription "In God We Trust" on the nickel.
Hmm.
Lincoln agreed and soon signed an executive order to that effect. And of course, as we all know, Lincoln appears on the nickel,
right,
with the memorial on the back and In God We Trust on,
yes,
the nickel. So that's,
yes,
how we first got it started with that. And then, of course, later it was put on dollar bills and money as well. Which president reintroduced the president of delivering the State of the Union address to Congress? Now, for a long time, presidents did not make an address to Congress. In 1913, Woodrow Wilson started doing that again, and the last time it had been done was by Jefferson. So Jefferson was our third president, so we went from Jefferson all the way up to Lincoln, well over 100 years,
wow,
before they started doing that again. Jefferson was much taken with the British practice of addressing Parliament, so he decided that would be a good idea. That's why he did it, but he was the last president to do it, the first and only president to do it. After Jefferson, before Wilson, the State of the Union had been delivered in writing,
mm-hmm,
and someone else read it to the Congress. Which president personally designed the present presidential seal?
Oh, that's interesting.
That's interesting,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is.
That would be Harry Truman.
Okay.
In September of 1945, 2 months after Churchill's defeat as Prime Minister of England, Truman penned a note to Churchill on the bottom of a letter of an invitation by the President to Westminster College in Fulton, Missouri. And he says, "Come and I'll introduce you." So Churchill agreed to come, and President Truman agreed to introduce him at that ceremony. When the president met Churchill at Union Station in Washington to embark on the presidential train, Ferdinand Magellan, that was the name of the train, he pointed to the U.S. seal and said, "I've just redesigned it." The eagle now faces the palm branches and not the arrows. So up until that time, it was actually reversed.
Okay.
Now, thinking about the speech that he was going to deliver the next day, Churchill replied, "With all due respect, Mr. President, I'd like to have the U.S. Eagle's neck on a swivel so it can turn to the olive branch or to the arrows as the case now demands." Now, the reason he said that was we were beginning the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
Truman, though he had approved Churchill's talk in advance, denied he had later, when a storm erupted over Churchill's warning about the Soviet Union, America's wartime ally. Now, they had been with us during the Second World War. They helped us on the Western Front of the war to fight back the Germans from,
right,
moving into Russia. So Truman telegrammed Joseph Stalin and offered to send the battleship USS Missouri to bring him to America and give his side. He also ordered Dean Acheson, who was Secretary of State at the time, not to appear at a dinner honoring Churchill the next week, at which Acheson was scheduled to give brief remarks. So it could have created quite a controversy if Truman would have taken Churchill's remarks seriously, but he didn't. But as a result of that, the eagle now faces the palm branches and not the arrows, as it did before. I think this was kind of interesting because I think a lot of people know where this came from, but they maybe don't know the backstory. Which president chose the Star Spangled Banner as our national anthem? Now, the Star Spangled Banner was written by Francis Scott Key,
right,
during the War of 1812. Woodrow Wilson in 1917 signed an executive order making that our national anthem. A lot of people felt that they should have chosen Catherine Lee Bates' America the Beautiful as our national anthem.
Okay.
And to this day, there are still people that feel that that should be the national anthem and not the Star Spangled Banner. So I guess we'll have to leave it up to public opinion.
I guess so, huh?
If they want to change it. But there's an interesting backstory about Francis Scott Key. Of course, he was standing on the deck of, I think it might have been the USS Constitution, and was viewing what was happening over the harbor in Baltimore,
mm-hmm,
and that's where he came up with the lyrics. This was not originally written as a song. It was written as a poem.
Right.
And a lot of times, poems were turned into songs.
True.
And still they do that.
That's right? So true.
When I think about the folk singer that writes so many poems and then turns them into songs.
Well, King David did the same.
Yes, absolutely. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
The Bible, sure enough.
Which president established Thanksgiving Day? I think they still might teach this in school. Abraham Lincoln.
Okay.
On October the 24th of 1864, Abraham Lincoln, of course, a very religious man.
Yes.
But on October the 24th of 1864, he issued an official proclamation for Thanksgiving observance on the fourth Thursday of November. In 1789, Washington had issued a similar proclamation, mm-hmm. Thanksgiving, but no specific date had ever been set aside.
Okay.
So I think they were still celebrating Thanksgiving in November every year,
right.
But there wasn't a specific date for it. This is kind of interesting, I always thought. Having portrayed presidents before and having had Hail to the Chief played when mm-hmm. we introduce our presidents, I oftentimes wondered who got started with that. What was the first president? So Hail to the Chief, of course, is a signature tune to announce the immediate presence of a president. The first president to introduce Hail to the Chief was John Tyler. He had it played at the White House. Again, the words from a poem by Sir Walter Scott.
Okay.
Hail to the Chief, who in triumph advances. And then, of course, it was later put to music. Before Hail to the Chief, they oftentimes played Hail Columbia,
okay.
which was actually taken from a British composer that also started out as a poem before it became a song.
Now, what's that music they always play when the president is coming into an entrance?
That is Hail to the Chief. That's it.
Okay.
Yep, that's Hail to the Chief.
Okay.
Right. That's Hail to the Chief.
I'm relearning history. I'm sure
absolutely.
Some of those who are listening are relearning as well.
I hope so. We have, what, about 9 minutes, something like that?
Yes.
Okay. We can go in a new category. This is kind of a fun category. As we all know, the presidents have a lot of state dinners and a lot of other dinners that aren't necessarily called state dinners, mm-hmm. but they have dinners where they invite people from Congress, people from the Senate, basketball players when they win the NBA, baseball players when they win the World Series, that type of thing. So they do a lot of entertaining at the White House. A lot of people don't know, but up until, and I might get this wrong, but I think somewhere around the 1900s, maybe right around the time Benjamin Harrison or Grover Cleveland was becoming president, the president had to pay for a lot of this stuff out of his salary. A lot of the things, a lot of the dinners and things like that had to come out of the president's own salary.
Mm.
In fact, in the early days when Lincoln was still there, he was paying what utilities were. In other words, he had to pay for the coal or for the wood that was used to heat the White House. They had to pay for any parties or any entertaining or any food.
Mm.
All the food that was cooked in the White House was paid for by the president out of his own salary.
Wow.
So it wasn't until the later years that Congress started providing funds for the running of the White House, for the upkeep of the grounds, for the upkeep of the house itself. In fact, over the years, the White House, or the Executive Mansion, it was as it was called before Teddy Roosevelt, was starting to get in pretty bad shape. There were cases where the floors were sagging, where they had to close down certain rooms because they weren't safe to enter, and the president, at this point, didn't have enough money to fix things.
Right.
So eventually, of course, Congress stepped in and started providing that money.
Well,
they had to. They really did.
Keep that house.
Or it was going to fall down around them. Right. Absolutely.
Right.
And there's an interesting side story to that. When we finish this category, if I don't forget, I'll mention that.
Okay.
This is really kind of crazy. Which president had a 1,235-pound cheese presented to him at the White House? You never guess this one. Thomas Jefferson.
Okay.
On New Year's Day of 1802, President Jefferson was greeted with this gift with the sign, "The greatest cheese in America for the greatest man in America."
Wow.
Israel Cole of Cheshire, a town in the Berkshire Mountains in western Massachusetts, had transported a 1,235-pound cheese to Washington in a cart pulled by 6 horses and gave it to the president.
That's something.
Now, how long do you suppose it took to eat 1,200 pounds of cheese?
Everybody in D.C. could have had a piece of that cheese, right?
It doesn't tell me, but I'm going to guess it took a long time.
Yes.
And, of course, you know, a lot of people, my wife for one, if I get out a piece of cheese and it has a tiny piece of mold on it, she goes through the ceiling.
My dad used to.
I just cut it off.
My dad did the same.
And that's
thing.
What they did in the olden days, and people still do that. You know, a lot of people leave their cheese set out on the table and let it age. Yeah, so you just cut the mold off. So I'm sure that this got pretty moldy before it was entirely consumed.
Probably so.
Yeah. Which 19th century president ran up a $25,000 wine bill?
Ooh, he was thirsty.
Here again, old Thomas Jefferson.
Okay.
Jefferson spent about $25,000 a year in the purchase of French and Italian wines.
Mm.
Now again, he's paying for this himself, right? He was a connoisseur of fine wines, and this is an interesting backstory. Jefferson preferred the lighter Bordeaux to the heavier Burgundy or Italian wines. He also encouraged Italian grape growers to emigrate to America. In his library, there were books on grapes and wine and on how to make wine.
Mm.
In 1981, I remember Jefferson was in the White House in 1803. In 1981, a case of wine marked for Thomas Jefferson was found in a Rothschild cellar, which would be over in France.
Really?
In the French Revolution, the cache of red Bordeaux wine was hidden from authorities and put behind a newly erected wall. They discovered it in 1981, and it sold for 6 figures.
Oh,
something in excess of $100,000 for a case of wine.
Isn't that something?
With Jefferson's name on it.
Mm.
And I'll bet you to this day, not one bottle of it has ever been opened.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
What a find.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know how long wine lasts. And I would assume that if it were properly prepared or bottled or whatever, that it could last indefinitely, because I know in some of the tombs that they excavated of the Egyptian, people have found wine that was still good.
Really?
So that's
thousands
of years. Yeah, right.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, six figures for a case of Jefferson wine. Mm. Interesting. A popular candy bar is named after a daughter of a president. Got any idea who that was? I've heard this mentioned a couple of times on TV over the years. The president was Grover Cleveland, and the child was his daughter. Her name was Ruth, and they called her Baby Ruth.
Baby Ruth.
Right.
I was thinking about the baseball guy, right?
And a lot of people think that Baby Ruth, the chocolate candy bar, is named after his daughter Ruth. The Yankee immortal Babe Ruth. She was born in Washington, D.C. in 1891. George Herman Babe Ruth wasn't born until 4 years later in Baltimore, Maryland. When Cleveland was inaugurated the second time and moved back into the White House, the little blonde tyke became a favorite of the press corps.
Mm.
Ruth Cleveland died in 1904 from diphtheria.
Oh.
Now, interestingly, she didn't live very long. Interestingly enough, Cleveland was the only president ever to be married in the White House.
Okay.
And I think I might have mentioned this previously. But he married a gal by the name of Frances Folsom, who was the daughter of Cleveland's law partner, Oscar Folsom, when they were attorneys in Buffalo, New York. Now, when Frances was born, Grover Cleveland was named her godfather.
Okay.
Because he was a partner of her father.
Okay.
He was her godfather when she was a child. When she was 22 and he was 49, they were married. So he married his godchild, who was 20, almost 30 years younger than him.
Godchild.
Yeah. In the White House. One thing interesting about their marriage, when they did their wedding vows in the White House, you know, it says to honor and obey.
Right.
The bride says to honor and obey. Cleveland asks that Obey be taken out of the...
Okay.
So it was only to honor.
Yes.
Not Obey. What's our time?
Okay.
How much time do we have?
We have 2 minutes.
2 minutes. I can do another. Which president generally rejected meat and preferred fish on the dinner table? That would be George Washington. The old general did not refuse to eat meat out of some principle or scruple. Rather, it was because he couldn't chew beef very well because of his ill-fitting dentures. He had horrible teeth. Mm. So most of his teeth were gone by the time he reached an early age. He did not have wooden teeth. We're going to set that straight.
Yeah, because people have said that.
A lot of people thought he had wooden teeth. He actually did not have wooden teeth. His teeth were actually fashioned from, most of the time, were fashioned from lamb's teeth. So they would shave down the teeth of the lamb. Because if you've ever seen a lamb or a sheep, their teeth really resemble a human's teeth, only they're much larger. So a lot of his teeth were fashioned from lamb's teeth. He also, at times, had teeth that were made out of ivory, like elephant tusks and that type of thing.
Right.
Yeah. He did not miss meat in his daily fare because he preferred fish. And, of course, fish is much easier to chew, particularly trout, and especially the salt codfish that swam in the Chesapeake Bay and also in the Potomac River, which was right near not only Washington, D.C., but Mount Vernon as well.
Okay.
So.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
The trivia. It just leaves me, you know, wanting more and
hearing
more about the past.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
What those presidents have done and some of the things you do. It brings back to memory things you've learned in, like, history, American history in school and things like that. But, wow. So fascinating. So thank you, Fred, for the first hour. And don't forget that Fred will be here our next hour, 11:15, to the top of the hour of 12 noon. Those of you who are listening, thank you for listening. And I pray that you can listen the second hour. Like I said, if it's your first time, I pray it's not your last time. We thank you and admonish you and greatly appreciate each and every one of you. This is Linda Sims, a voice of a people here on WGH Talk and also Facebook Live for the next hour. So just tune in. Until next time, be blessed and thank you so very much.
You're listening to WWGH.